We're back with an all-new episode of Dirtcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Madeline Davies.
I am your other co-host, Megan Reynolds.
And today, we have a very special return guest. Vulture's E. Alex Jung is joining us to talk about, we'll call it a resurgence, we'll call it a surgence. In Asian American-centered pop culture, like Crazy Rich Asians and To All the Boys I Loved Before, and kind of going back to the Joy Luck Club, which used to kind of be the sole example.
By casting and having like an Asian American lead, it sort of adds another layer unexpectedly.
But before we get to that,
some dirtiest dirt.
Some dirty ass dirt.
Dirty fucking dirt.
We got some dirt this week.
Oh, Christ.
Okay.
Just when you... I think I'm just like, it feels like it's been a slow summer and now... in, like, this last miserable week when, like, nothing is happening. And
right.
It's, like, all this shit happened.
Yeah, it's like the celebrities are back to school.
Yeah, everyone is back.
They got their notebooks. They got their pencils.
They have their little backpacks and they're ready.
In some cases, checking into rehab.
Ah, yes. What a beautiful transition.
Thank you.
That was nice. The celebrity in question checking back into rehab is Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck, who, like, again, it's very easy to project on celebrities who you see... just through the tabloids.
In like a paparazzi
but
fashion,
it
right?
Seems like he's had some issues for a while.
One could say.
Be it the giant phoenix back tattoo.
I mean, my God.
I just called it a tattoo, a tattoo is what they're called.
I mean, I feel like there should be another word for it.
Yeah, and just like, I know he's like going through it a little bit.
Yeah.
He's still not divorced from Jennifer Garner.
No.
But they seem to have like a pretty good relationship as far as like raising their children goes.
I think they're co-parenting in a way that to me strikes me as like very healthy.
Yeah. Again, we're all projecting.
Yes. I know nothing except for what I see in, like, Us Weekly.
But here's what I can say. Good for you, Ben Affleck.
Good for you, Ben Affleck.
It takes a lot of courage.
It does.
And money.
Courage and two very important things. He broke up with Lindsay Shookus.
And we are shookest.
He broke up with Lindsay Shookus.
Went to a Jack in the Box with a Playboy model.
Oh, my God.
Which also, like... You know, sounds fine.
Ben Affleck loves Jack in the Box. He no longer loves Lindsay Shookus.
Or, I mean, he's no longer loving on Lindsay.
Yes.
I mean, we don't know if he still has feelings for her.
I have, again, no clue. But he and Jennifer Garner are still married. She was spotted in paparazzi photos, I believe, in the car escorting him to rehab.
Yeah.
Divorce, I think, is on its way.
I mean, it's been on its way for a long-ass time.
But I feel like the end is actually in sight this time.
What makes you say that?
I feel like maybe he'll be in rehab for, like, maybe through the end of the year. And then Jen will finally—the divorce will be finalized after.
Again, why do you think that?
I don't know. I just do. That just seems like a timeline that makes sense to me.
It's just like what your gut is telling you about your close acquaintances, Ben and Jen.
I mean, who can say? Certainly not me, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Sure.
I feel like that seems like a reasonable timetable.
Okay.
For these events to proceed.
Sure.
I could be wrong. In fact, when we get out of this podcast, I could go back to my computer and discover that he has been sprung free from rehab and he and Jen are renewing their vows.
All I'm saying is strength to you, Ben.
Yes.
May you find the fire in you of a dozen back tattoo phoenixes.
Mm, yes. Channel that fire.
I know, like, for a long time, like, he had a rumored gambling addiction. Like, that
also
was a big thing for
him. Right. I mean, he's got a lot going on.
I say this, like, without mocking, and it's hard to say that after I've been, like, full-on mocking him.
Yes.
Alcoholism is a fucking disease.
Yeah.
And is awful.
That's true. That is very true. Again, we only have well wishes.
Moving on.
Moving right the fuck on.
To a triad that I just can't get enough of. Elon Musk, Grimes, Azalea Banks.
Mm.
Guess what? The drama is not over.
No.
From when she apparently got trapped in his house and tweeted that he tweets on acid and then said her phone was being tapped.
Yep.
She's since apologized. I don't know if that's a part of... a bribe.
Hard to say. We cannot say.
But Azalea Banks wrote, "I feel terrible about everything. Mm-hmm. I came to your home without a single intention other than finishing a series of tracks with Grimes. I was welcome to a lot of personal information about you. The stuff made me feel awkward and uncomfortable about being privy to, yet I never had any intentions of ever using the information against you. What started off as a catfight led to some seriously unexpected consequences, and I sincerely apologize. Tesla's stock dropped following all of this, which I don't see how those things could relate.
I don't either. I don't know much about, like, I mean, I just don't.
I'm just wondering, like, what's the Venn diagram of people who, like, own Tesla stock and who are following Azealia Banks?
That's true.
I'm sure there's some overlap.
There totally
but
is,
But I just, like, have a hard time believing that that's why it dropped.
I don't think that. I mean, who knows?
Oh, and there's also rumors that Grimes dumped him.
Oh. What if Azealia Banks and Elon Musk, what if that's his next move? If Grimes has dumped him. And they realize that they're both, like, this specific kind of unusual that works together. That won't happen, I don't think. But.
The idea makes me extremely nervous. Like, it makes me, like, my bowels sick.
Like
a little, like, oh, he's dead.
Like a roller coaster feeling. Like, I don't know about this. This is bad.
She also wrote, I've been told you're a fan of my music. Mm. If you're up for it, I'd like to meet you in person to properly and formally introduce myself to you. After all, we are now co-stars in pop culture's latest fan fictions. Girl, you wrote that fan fiction.
You did. You started it. You, like, opened the blank doc and, like, started typing. You made it.
That's insane that, like, she didn't meet him and made a lot of comments about his, like, and she said, like, I encountered a lot of personal information.
She didn't meet him. She uncovered personal information. She was allegedly trapped in his home for, like, 3 days. Nothing about this is airtight, I would say.
I think Azealia Banks is, like, pretty much an asshole.
Yeah.
I'm sure Elon Musk is an asshole.
Yes.
Grimes is probably an asshole.
Yes.
We're both assholes.
100%.
Opinions are like assholes. We're all one. I don't know what that means.
Good, another asshole.
On to the next one.
This is really just, we're just sorting through a pile of assholes right now. That's a really aggressive image, and I apologize. Louis C.K.
He's back, babe.
He's back, in case you were wondering where he's been.
He's served his time.
How long has it been?
His redemption arc has completed itself. It was like February, March, I think, that
all this shit happened. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, yeah. In all that time, just suffered with all of his money in his townhouse. Just being lauded and supported by his community, the poor thing.
But the community of comedy people, a fun community, my favorite community.
Yeah.
Of all the communities are fucking comedians. Yeah, I love them.
The only thing that really actually happened to him is that, like, horrible looking movie about, like, having a hot daughter who wants to, like, fuck an old director.
I love you, Daddy.
That did not come out. Yeah. That was the consequence.
Right. And he just got to, like, lay low and, like, be quiet for a little while.
He did a surprise comedy set and got a standing ovation because, again, the man has suffered.
He's suffered.
And then, of course, like, people were kind of annoyed by this assertion that he's, like, somehow redeemed himself for, like, jerking off non-consensually in front of women. A lot of, like, the comedy community is, like, jumped to his defense, but it's, like, defense against what?
Right, right.
Like, nothing has happened.
Well, because he also, I mean, it's, like, the one person that did jump in a spectacular fashion is Michael Ian Black.
Michael Ian Black, who, like, always loves to weigh in
he does.
On issues.
He's a weigher-inner.
Tweeted, "We'll take heat for this, but people have to be allowed to serve their time and move on with their lives. I don't know if it's been long enough or if his career will recover or people will have him back, but I'm happy to see him try." Like, people will have him back. His career is fine.
Unfortunately, I did not ever think his career was going to suffer permanent
damage
from
this. No, of course not. This one woman, there was, like, an incredible comeback. Because, like, Michael Ian Black was having a lot of, like, discussions with people in the comments who were just like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, this was a really, like, poorly thought out thing to say.
Yeah.
And, like, all of his answers were very much like, I will have to consider this late. Like, you know,
oh,
just bullshit, whatever. And this woman, Talia Lavin, who is verified. You can find her, guys.
You can.
Michael Ian Black was saying, he's relying on the market of the audience. And then Talia responded, actually, he's relying on the chummy goodwill of most male comedy club owners to outweigh the extremely real harm of sexual harassment.
Yes.
Someone tried to, like, argue with her a little bit and said, isn't he relying on the goodwill of both the men and women in the audiences who choose to see him? And she, like, came back with one of the most perfect tweets of all time.
I'm ready.
And I hate Twitter, so it's saying something. She said, the audience last night didn't choose to see him. It was a non-consensual surprise, his specialty. Which I'm just like,
oh, that's nice. That is very, woof.
Like, I'm not on a rolling chair right now, but, no, but if I was, I would have, like, pushed myself away from the table because it's so good.
That's a good tweet.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I mean, like, this is such, like, a male comedy thing to weigh in on. It's like, oh, what is he supposed to do? Never work again?
Like, yes. Fucking say, Christ, man. Yeah.
I was going to say, that's never been on the table, so why even bring it up as an option?
Yeah. They seem to view it as some sort of, like, God-given calling. They could not imagine, fathom doing anything else. And it's just like...
Or it's like, this is a freedom of speech issue.
Yeah.
It's like, ugh, please, again, no one ever is taking it away from you.
Right.
Like, you're still... in power, you still have the power.
Yeah.
No one's taking it from you.
Right.
So fuck you.
Mostly so fuck you. That's our official stance on it is so fuck you.
It's just like,
I mean, all this means is like now that the bad men have like sat at home and not done anything for 6 months, we are now entering like their return.
Here's like one thing I will add. I do believe in like redemption arcs. But also, you have to, a big part of that is redeeming yourself.
Right.
And like, that is the part that somehow gets, I don't know, like left obscured, out of all of these right. conversations about redemption is like, okay, so what did he do? He, again, he didn't work for less than a year.
Yeah.
He is financially stable.
Yeah.
There's no risk of that being a problem.
Right.
Did he volunteer at a woman's shelter? Did he, you know, like, what did he do?
Like, redemption doesn't mean just, like, working again.
Yeah. Fuck you.
Yeah. This next item.
Hey, being bad, not just for men.
That's true. Oh, well, you're really killing it with these transitions today.
Asia Argento is one of Harvey Weinstein's most prolific accusers. Mm-hmm. She herself has been accused of sexual misconduct. She paid former child actor and musician Jimmy Bennett $38,000 in a sexual assault settlement.
This is from Variety. It says, the claim and resulting discussions of payment are included in documents between the lawyers for Argento and Bennett. The claim states Bennett was a little over 17 years old at the time of the alleged assault, which took place in a California hotel room in 2013 when Argento was 37. The legal age of consent in California is 18. As part of the agreement, Bennett, who is now 22, gave a selfie of he and Argento in bed, and it's copyright to Argento, now 42. Three people familiar with the case told the New York Times that the documents were authentic.
Yikes.
Ugh.
I don't think anybody with any sense would ever argue that women can't be predators.
Correct.
It's just, it's kind of more about, it becomes more about power and who is in right. power and who's wielding the power.
I mean, all of these are essentially about power at the core, I think.
I think that is central to, like, the Me Too movement is pushing back against who has power and who's abused that power.
Mm-hmm.
And it fucking sucks that Asia Argento is one of them because a lot of people are using this to, like, negate an entire movement.
Right.
Kate Mann, who wrote the book Down Girl, The Logic of Misogyny, made a point where she was saying how frequently abusers' behavior is excused or explained by talking about how they themselves have been abused.
Ah, yes.
Which I think a lot of people are abused and then don't go on to hurt other people, you know?
Mm.
But she was making an interesting comment that the same people who are so quick to trot that out with men were, like, very silent when it came to Asia Argento.
Yeah.
And while that does not, again, negate what she does at all or even explain it, it's just, like, an interesting thing that instead it's just being used as, like, oh, the Me Too movement is bullshit. Women are bad, too. It's like, yeah, we know. Like,
I mean, the potential for bad is in everyone.
I just think it's, like, frustrating the way that, like, this has turned into something where it's, like, you still have to, like, defend against misogyny, even though this is a case of, like, a woman doing a bad thing.
Right.
Right. You know, it's like, it's not just that, right? It's like, it becomes this like snowball of issues. Mm-hmm. I think when the genders are reversed, like, it's like, this is not about men. This is about one bad guy, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Sorry, that was kind of a messy thought.
No,
because I'm having a hard time sorting through it.
It's a real twist.
I mean, so Rose McGowan, who became very close friends with Asia Argento when they both came forward as Weinstein accusers, she herself, a complicated person.
Yes.
Because, again, we all are, some of us more than others. Mm-hmm. She released a pretty solid statement, I have to say.
Yeah.
Asia, you were my friend. I loved you. You spent and risked a lot to stand with the Me Too movement. I really hope you find your way through this process to rehabilitation and betterment. Anyone can be better. I hope you can be too. Do the right thing. Be honest. Be fair. Let justice stay its course. Be the person you wish Harvey could have been. That itself is like a pretty powerful idea.
Yeah.
I think it says something for the way that when we confronted with something shitty we've done to somebody else, or at worst, abusive, that we consider the way we've been treated horribly in the past and try to like make good on that.
Yeah.
Use your power to actually work to better this person's life or repair the damage you have done, which I think is something that like Louis C.K. hasn't done. You know, like
he has not, correct.
And I'm not saying that Asia Argento has at all, but it's something that I feel like everybody who's kind of thrown into this like redemption narrative needs to consider, as opposed to just like, well, I went away for a little bit.
Right. We are so happy to be sitting here with E. Alex Jung, senior writer at Vulture, friend of the pod. He's been here before, and he's here again to talk about Crazy Rich Asians, To All the Boys I Loved Before, Asian American representation, etc.
I also just want to say you might remember Alex from having one of the best podcast voices that we've ever featured. So just
I'm glad I'm not a one-hit wonder.
Yeah. Just relax, listen, let it wash over you.
Hi, Alex.
Hi.
I feel like there has been sort of a, we are either on the precipice of or just like in the middle of some sort of resurgence of Asian American stories being pushed to the forefront in culture. This is also happening in literature a lot right now, which is not something we're going to talk about here, but it is.
Yeah, we don't talk about books.
We don't talk about things like who reads.
But you read.
I do read.
Megan reads all the time. It's exhausting.
It is not exhausting.
Most of my books are books that Megan has like loaned me.
Right.
This is true.
I feel illiterate next to her.
Yeah.
That's nice. I love that. But it's happening a lot in books right now, but it is happening in a very large and splashy way in movies, in good old Hollywood.
I mean, it's sad that two things are considered large and splashy, you know, like they're dominating the landscape.
I mean, it is stupid.
But it happened at the same weekend, so you were really like
in everywhere. Because I mean, so Crazy Rich Asians is a movie directed by John Chu, based on a book by Kevin Kwan. It's actually a trilogy.
I met a girl, I fell in love, and I want to marry her. You're Nicholas Young. You're untouchable. But Rachel's not.
Have you prepped Rachel to face the wolves?
You know I'm back, like I never left.
I really admire you. It takes guts coming all the way over here, facing Nick's family.
All the books are really good and fun. The movie itself, thoughts? I liked it.
Oh, I loved it. I saw it like months ago.
Mm, yeah.
Like at like special Asian people screening. Mm-hmm. and I was nervous going into the movie. I remember that.
Same.
And feeling stressed out because I felt like I knew that this was going to be a big deal in terms of box office, like making it or breaking it or whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember I cried multiple times.
Oh, yes.
I laughed. I had fun. Also, I swooned.
I was like, I also teared up for sure.
I sobbed for like the second half of the movie.
I afterwards
that mom shit gets me every time.
Oh, for sure.
That's where I'm from too. I would describe that movie as a delight.
It was.
Yeah.
It was
like
it was
like fluffy and poppy and just kind of like everything you want for like a movie that you're gonna watch in the summer.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I mean, both films are like perfect summer rom-coms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To All the Boys I Loved Before, I watched that last night and I thoroughly enjoyed like every minute of it.
It was
adorable. I was like, this is great.
I mean, what I liked about Crazy Rich Asians was that the romance was never in doubt.
No.
Yeah.
And it was about the tension between Michelle Yeoh, who is truly
incredible.
A goddess.
Yeah, yes, she's one of the most beautiful women alive.
Yeah, she will never die. And she will, like, stand over our graves.
Unfortunately, yeah. Shaming
and
us.
Look, and look great.
Yeah. And then shaming
making
us for,
jewelry.
Like, making jewelry and then shaming us for, like, not calling more.
And our ghosts will say, thank you.
Yeah. No, Michelle Yeoh will, like, haunt my, yes, I feel triggered.
But I love that it was really a tension about that. It was a tension about acceptance into that family. And the romance is never in doubt.
Right.
Right.
And so the proposal in some ways is Michelle Yeoh saying yes, right?
Yeah. It was always Michelle Yeoh saying yes. Because Henry Golding was not going to do anything without his mother's approval because it always had to be about her.
Well, there was a big scene that was cut, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
Between Michelle Yeoh and Henry Golding, where in between the proposal and the Mahjong scene.
Yeah.
So you just see sort of like a montage-y thing of
right.
it. But apparently they shot a whole scene where, you know, he's like, why did you give me up to Amma, to the grandparents' house? And she's like, because I wanted you to be the favorite. And wasn't the favorite. And there was this whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, the proposal is really, I mean, there's so many instantly iconic scenes in this film. I think the proposal, the Mahjong scene.
Yes.
All of the food. Like, just the way, I think the fact that, because John Chu.
He knows how to shoot food.
He knows how, I mean, but he
it's
also.
A skill, too.
Yeah.
He's so easy to make it look gross.
Right.
He shot the movie like an action movie a little bit, which I fucking loved.
It was like Step Up to the Streets.
Yes. All, like, that that montage in the beginning where Radio 1 Asia sees them at the bar and then texts to, like, all the people. That was, like, incredible.
Yeah, it's really hard, too, I feel like, to do. Modern technology is really hard to portray on screen.
Yes.
Mm. Whereas, like, there was some drama in, like, a rotary phone, right? And there was, like,
even, like, a
flip phone has drama.
Because you can, like,
you clack it open.
If you're Naomi Campbell, you could throw it at someone.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can throw it at them. You can, and if you're Russell Crowe, you can throw a rotary phone, too.
I mean, anyone can throw. I might later this week. We'll see.
But, yeah, so it's, like, I think it's really hard when it's just like a tablet, you know, and they did a very good job of like letting us be a part of that world in a way that didn't feel horrible. I don't know.
Well, yeah, it just didn't feel, I mean, it was cheesy. It was a little bit cheesy, but in a way that harkened back to like old-timey, like rom-coms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like,
but the whole movie was kind of cheesy in a sweet way, you know?
Like, yeah.
The one thing that I was happy about this movie is that I just wanted it to be decent.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, I was
just clear just like, a very low
yeah
bar.
Like the bar is like this high, is like 2 inches high. If you can just get over that, that's great. Like, congratulations.
And I think it far exceeded
it did yeah. And that was, and people, every, I mean, it's done really well at the box office. Everyone I've talked
like
to.
Yeah, like slayed opening weekend.
Right.
I saw it at like 4:30 p.m. on a weekday.
Perfect.
And my friend and I brought a screw top of wine into the movie.
Nice.
And the girls next to us were doing the exact same thing. And it was actually so much fun because the guy in it is like
Henry
one of the
Golding
hottest people I've ever looked
at. An extremely beautiful man.
Every time like he would like take a shirt off, like the girls next to us were just like, ah! And then we'd be like, I know. And it just was like, I don't know. I love those movies that are communal in that way. And it really felt like that. We're like, we were all just like excited for the whole movie. Every time Constance Wu and Michelle Yeoh went head to head, everyone was like, oh. And I loved it.
Learning that when they were going to make this movie in October 2016, they had an offer from Netflix for like a bajillion dollars and like 3 greenlit sequels and like complete like creative freedom, and they turned it down to go with Warner Brothers. And the reason that they did is because they wanted the movie to be on a big screen. Chu said, "We were gifted this position to make a decision no one else can make, which is turning down the big payday for rolling the dice on the box office, but being invited to the big party, which is people paying money to go see us." And that, when I read that, I was like, oh, like that made it so much better.
I fucking respect that.
That's a bold ass decision to make.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like knowing your worth.
Yeah.
And proving it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were like, we're going to prove something.
Something I've never done.
Okay.
I know it. I know my worth, but I'm constantly sliding in under the bar.
And that quote was taken from a big Hollywood Reporter thing that went up before the movie came out. Something else that was in there that I thought was interesting is that Chu said it's a movie not for an Asian audience, but specifically for an Asian American one.
Mm. I do think the film is Asian American.
100%. Like, I don't know how this movie would do in China.
Yeah.
Because I think it is too American for a strictly Asian audience to accept it at face value and to even praise it, because they would pick apart things that were left in for American people, or Asian American people, and I guess other Americans.
I mean, not to conflate the two things, but I was actually talking to Dodi Stewart about the movie, and she was on an episode we had a while ago about K-drama.
Mm. Mm.
And I know different, you know, different countries, different cultures, but K-drama is really focused on, like, the Cinderella story. It's really, really big of, like, really rich guy, normie girl.
Right.
Totally.
They fall in love. There's family tensions. And so I feel like that itself is sort of a globally appealing story.
No, I think that part does feel kind of Asian to me, like in a sort of classical drama sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. But I guess, like, in terms of casting, in terms of, you know, like, accents, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Ken Jeong, Awkwafina.
Yeah.
Like, that whole, the Go family. Like,
Go family is incredible.
Their accents are all over the place.
Oh, yeah. Right? Oh, yeah. No, no. It's just everyone was just picking something and just going with it.
Right.
Commitment.
Fun. Right, right. You know, just I think in terms of, like, the world building, in terms of how you're casting people, it did feel very Asian American. And I don't know. That seems fine to me.
I'm sure there are people that are upset about that. There are also people that were upset about, like, the fact that, like, the class bullshit in the movie, like, how it's just, like, really rich people, even though it's in the title. And, like, how we don't see, like, the only other people in Singapore that we see that aren't East Asian are guards at Amma's house.
Right.
And her, like, servants, for lack of a better word.
Right. Who looked Southeast Asian.
Who looked Southeast Asian, right. Yeah. But, like, I've read some things that were, like, but there's so many other people and blah, 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 blah. And, like, I don't know. I feel like it is rude and unfair to expect a movie to be everything for everyone all of the time. And this is just, like, one story. And it's just because one story has been presented, there's room for others. But just, like, the last one was the fucking Joy Luck Club, for Christ's sake.
And so, you know, this is a movie and book where the principal characters are all extremely wealthy Chinese Singaporean people.
Yeah,
right.
Clocking it for that seems like such a weird
critique to me. It's kind of lazy. Yeah, it's me. No one did, but that's my take.
So I guess the song by Coldplay, Yellow, features very heavily in the film, and it's very, like, tongue in cheek.
Look at the stars, look how they shine.
I don't know how tongue-in-cheek it is. I think John Chu, like, truly loves
that song. But I guess, they requested to put it in the movie.
I felt stressed out about that.
Coldplay, Chris Martin, said no.
Right.
Because they did that song Princess of China with Rihanna.
They did.
Which got a lot of blowback for being, like, what would you call it?
Orientalist.
And I think he just saw the name of the movie and was just like, absolutely not.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Like, you cannot use my song Yellow for that. Like, and then the director wrote him directly and was like, hey, like, this is what I'm trying to do. He was like, I always thought of Yellow as, like, a very derogatory term, and, like, your song is the first time I thought of it as, like, a beautiful word. Right. Which, again, is so sincere that it makes me uncomfortable. But
that
also
nice. we should trace a little bit why this movie has been so big for representation is because of the Joy Luck Club.
My mother died 4 months ago. I realized for the first time they wanted me to take my mother's place. So I sat down on the East, where things begin, with my mother's best friends.
And also Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle, which I have is constantly erased from the discussion about no other movies
it
about Asian people.
It is erased from the discussion.
We're so high right now.
We're not low.
Oh, dude, I don't know about you, but I'm fucking hungry as balls.
Yeah, no shit, dude. Let's eat. Hey, no, I don't feel like delivery tonight.
What about KFC?
Yeah. No. We've been there too many times. I want something we haven't had in a while.
Part of the reason for me why I enjoyed Crazy Rich Asians so much is because it is not a hard scrabble immigrant, like, sewing gold into, like, the lining of your jacket and, like, running with your baby daughter in a basket kind of shit, which is, like, I mean, the Joy Luck Club is great. It's melodramatic in
and
a way.
And it is a story that should have been told.
100%.
There are many more like it. That
so many people right, have sewed things into linings of coats and ran.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can't wait to see more of them, I guess. But
I think it kind of plays into the whole idea of white people being comfortable seeing non-white people in subservient positions or
right.
in positions of suffering, because mm-hmm. that's like a way that they can empathize in a weird way.
Yeah.
But also it like doesn't question any power dynamics.
Right.
Right.
Alex, did you have any problems with the movie?
Ooh.
Because I'm thinking if I had any problems with the movie, and the answer is probably like, eh.
I think maybe there's critiques to be made.
I mean, of course there. I mean, yes, nothing is perfect.
But I'm like already tired of
right.
like
I know thinking I, about
every
it.
Every single take I read, I'm just like, oh my god.
I read like three paragraphs and I'm like, no more.
It's also just like, well, like, can we just have one thing?
Right. Well, you also see where it's going usually, like the
yeah.
argument.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And true.
It just feels very tired for some reason. Like I'm already exhausted at hearing you work up the energy,
yeah.
to get mad about this,
yeah.
And it just doesn't feel like the movie that really lends itself for it because it is, I think, really light and well-made and
right.
well-acted.
Right.
It's a middlebrow rom-com. Let's celebrate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the best kind of like, I mean, this will sound rude, but it's really not. It's like the best kind of like plain movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like this is exactly what I would want to watch on like a cross-country flight or something. Like it's perfect. It would keep me engaged. It would still, like, I mean, a lot of its, like, visual impact would be lost on that shitty little screen. But the story, like, all of it would still be enough to keep me, like, I mean, I think my favorite genre of film is, like, plain movie.
Yeah.
If I'm being honest. Like, my tastes are relatively pedestrian. I feel great about that. I'm ready to see what else, what others, all of the other stories, show me them. Where
right.
are they?
Right. And, it, yeah. and tons are in the pipeline right now, right?
Yeah.
Which is really exciting.
I mean, I feel like this was something that I felt about the first couple of seasons of Fresh Off the Boat.
Mm.
Is that, like, I don't think it's nice in the beginning to see, like, little nods to that, like, maybe white people wouldn't get, like, either if it's in, like, the set or, like, slipping in and out of Mandarin, like, whatever. Like, that's nice. But then I don't necessarily think you need to, it's hard to say. I mean, it's like you don't necessarily need to center that. Like, I'm Asian. Like, that does not have to be the centerpiece. You don't have to build everything around that.
Sure.
But it's okay. Like, it's, I guess it's like, where's the line? Like, I don't think
right.
every film that happens to feature, like, I mean, for To All the Boys I Loved Before,
right.
she's supposed to be biraciial, right?
Yes.
Because the dad is fucking Aiden. Jesus Christ.
She did not come from Aiden.
No. John Corbett.
Oh, sorry.
Who plays Aiden on Sex and the City also is cast as the dad in this Netflix rom-com. It's surprising, not in a good way necessarily.
It's jarring when you figure it out. I felt very fucked up about it.
Yeah, I don't know.
If Aiden was in the trailer, I didn't notice it because Lana Condor is so good.
She's great.
Also, she's amazing.
She's so adorable.
She's not getting enough credit.
I don't think so either.
For how good she is.
My letters are my most secret possessions. I write them when I have a crush so intense, I don't know what else to do. There are five total. Peter, the most popular guy in school, Kenny from camp, Lucas from Homecoming, John Ambrose from Model UN, and Josh, but he's my sister's boyfriend.
What are you doing?
Nothing.
Nobody else knows about them.
Oh my God.
Oh, okay.
The letters are out.
That was just like a very nice, like, teen rom-com YA sort of bouncy fun. Everything was fine. It felt a little, like, I didn't feel like the sort of gut punch of, like, happy tears at the end right. that I expect from a rom-com, but I think that's maybe just because it was for younger people. I don't know. That's
it
just
me. It also was produced by, like, Awesome Entertainment,
what's
which
that?
Is, like, a Vine. Like, it was, like, created by, like, Vine stars.
Lara Jean's, like, Asian identity was not at the forefront of that film.
No.
And that was nice.
It's interesting to me because—
Weird that— do you think it's weird that it wasn't?
Well, a couple of things were interesting to me. One thing was that in the books, they call themselves the Song Girls.
Oh, right.
After their mom's last name.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is something that they just kind of, like— like.
Oh, that wasn't in the—
That's not in the movie.
Right.
But— I don't know. Like, I think this is sort of where you see how important casting is because I do kind of think, and from what I understand, even in Jenny Han, the author of the book, was shopping the book around or optioning the book around to become a film, you know, like a lot of people wanted to make it a white character. And I think you could have, right? I think.
Yeah. Yes.
Then she just would have been like a she's all that type character.
Right. Yeah.
Right. But I don't know. There was something to me that did strike me as like an Asian American feeling that I sort of projected onto it of feeling invisible, feeling kind of second best.
Actually,
and like sort of in the background of things. And even though you're like hot and cute and you wear like nice shoes.
Right. Yeah. But sort of like thinking that you are just like getting through it, just being like, no one's looking at me.
Right.
Because when her friend calls her out for like being invisible but actually being a bitch or whatever she says in the bathroom. Oh. It was something like that. She's like, you think no one's looking at you, but like, actually you're a bitch or something rude. I don't remember the exact phrasing. But yes, you're right. There is sort of like an Asian American feeling.
Which you can sort of, you know, like with a white character, that would have just been like feeling like an outsider.
Yeah, like introvert me.
Right. But like, you know, by casting and having like an Asian American lead, it sort of adds another layer unexpectedly.
It's that like you can, built into like a stereotype that is, you know.
Yeah. It's like part of the world, right? It's like part of a feeling in the world. And that sort of taps into that. And so that's kind of interesting to me, right? To think
sort
about
of
like
model minority bullshit.
How casting sort of maybe like creates a narrative inevitably, even though the text itself might not lend it
to
that, you know.
So one thing in the movie that I felt conflicted about, and I'm interested to hear your take, is how it's sort of a send up to like John Hughes movies. It's very much just like a standard teen, you know, like it has like almost an 80s feel despite the like modern technology.
Right.
But they also feature a part with Long Duk Dong, who's maybe one of the most racist caricatures to be on film since like Breakfast at Tiffany's.
He is.
And like it gets called out where he's the guy who she's dating, Peter.
Right.
Woke hottie.
Says like, isn't this really racist? Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, but like, you know, Jake Ryan is so cute.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just found it interesting that it called it out specifically, but while kind of embracing the film as something bigger. I don't know.
There's a kind of aspirationalism baked into the movie that I feel that's probably part of the book too, about wanting to be the protagonist in that way.
Yeah.
Of those films.
Right.
And sort of like
ignoring the shit that's like definitely a red flag, but you're just like, whatever, it's fine.
Yeah.
Because tiny racist things happen every day. I think, yes, I think it's like seeing, you see, you having a larger thing in mind, which is perhaps projecting yourself onto the protagonist of what, Sweet Six? No, which one?
16 Candles.
Sweet 16.
Right.
16 Candles.
Which is, you know, which is what so the thing that's been most interesting to me, and I'd be curious to hear what you two think about it, is the current overwhelming, intense thirst for Peter Kavinsky on Twitter right now. Many of them by, like, women of color, too.
Right.
Or men of color, too. Like, people of color. Something about it is interesting to me that have theories about, but I don't quite want to.
Is it because he's, like, a spicy white?
Yeah, I think that's
part
of it.
Like, is that it?
I
think that's part of it.
Okay.
This is something I feel really gross saying about a movie about teenagers. And the actor is actually 22, we discovered last night.
Oh, everyone Googled that afterwards.
Well, I was just like, let me make sure he's not.
But the scene, there's a scene where they make out in the hot tub on a ski trip. Like, it's, you know, this, like, shy but actually really outgoing and smart protagonist, you know, finally kind of gets to make out with the super hot guy. It's, like, a pretty sexy scene.
I know. I was like, Jesus Christ.
Also, she's in, like, a negligee.
She's in, like, a see-through nightgown that she, like, waves into the water in. I was like, you didn't bring a bathing suit, but you couldn't just go in your, like, underwear?
Like, look, she knew it was time to make her move.
She did. She had a mission.
But it was, like, that scene, I was kind of like, whoa.
I know, me too.
In a way that sparked something in me.
Yes, sure. A spark, you said.
That maybe made me nervous and then Googled what these people's ages
that
were.
That is roughly when I believe I also,
But yes, I don't know. Like, there was like a maturity to like the sexier scenes that I was unprepared for. And then I think that kind of was maybe like, all right.
Hello.
There's also a maturity to them.
Yeah, very
right?
Much
that
so.
Is so unreal.
That is, like, so fucked up because their whole they were very, like, put together.
I mean, the film is really it's a kind of wish fulfillment an adult wishes their high school experience.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I think that is very interesting.
I do want to talk to you, Alex, particularly, about a couple of things.
Sure.
One, I saw you, like, tweeted something that I thought was really poignant about people asking you if writing about Asian things is limiting. And you wisely responded that, like, there's not really any limits to being Asian, so why would it be? And then you also profiled Sandra Oh, who is the star of Killing Eve, which is such a good show.
It's the best show of 2018.
She's amazing in that.
She's so
and
good
she
in it.
Is someone she was like, when she got the script, she said something like, I never would have, I didn't imagine that the part they wanted me for was the titular role.
Right.
Which is devastating because she's so good in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, do you want to tell us a little bit about that experience of interviewing her? Or?
Sure. I had done two phone interviews with her before. Mm-hmm. One as like a walk-up to Killing Eve, and then another as after she got her Emmy nomination. And both of them were like weirdly emotional, and like I felt very connected to her even though we were just talking on the phone. And she did too.
Oh, sure.
Like she remembered the second time we talked that we had talked the first time on the phone. She's like dramatically authentic.
Yeah.
You know, in that way of like an actor, like she feels very actorly in that way.
Right.
Where like all the emotions are like kind of on the surface and you can like have this like really intense conversation.
Right.
And it was the whole thing was very intense for me. Like, you know, like I try to separate a certain kind of like personal emotional attachment to people when I talk to them or like when I do interviews. But it was hard with her because she also like wanted things from me.
Right.
And so there was like a interesting dynamic there that I was trying to figure out a little bit in that piece that I wrote.
Incredibly shallow question.
Yeah.
Is her hair as nice in person as it is on the show?
It's great.
Good question. Good answer. Alex, I'm so happy that you came here to sit down with us and talk to us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Dirtcast, and thank you to Alex Jung. Our show is produced by Levi Sharp. Manana Mofidi is our executive director of audio. Our theme music is by Stuart Wood. This episode was mixed by Jamie Colazzo. Want to send us a tip or just let us know what you think? Hit us up at dirtcast@jezebel.com. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.